Despite the recent rise in cases, the Atlantic bubble's effectiveness and success is being noticed worldwide, and for once we have something to be smug about. The Nova Scotia film industry, which has experienced a tumultuous 5 years in the wake of drastic government cuts, is too reaping the benefits, with production up and more already set for next year. This week on the show, we're talking hashtag NSFilmJobs. I'm Tara Thorne, and this is The Tideline. If you're listening to this, that means you're a subscriber to The Tideline, and I appreciate that so much. I know the subscription podcast model is new to a lot of people, and I'm very thankful that you're supporting the show. You may also be a subscriber to our parent company, the Halifax Examiner. November is the Examiner's annual subscription drive. The site is advertising free, which means things like reporters, investigations, and sassy little culture podcasts are paid for by the readers themselves. Or listeners, in my case. There are many support tiers starting at just $5 a month. Visit halifaxexaminer.ca, click subscribe in the banner, and you'll find out what those are. If you're already a subscriber, you could gift it to someone, because local news is always a nice present. And if you buy an annual subscription, they'll send you a t-shirt, as seen this week on Ellen Page. Ever heard of her? I wanted to tell you two bits of Cineplex news. One is that you can rent a theater. Currently, just Bears Lake, which I hope is rectified soon, but they have a lot of screens out there. That's probably why. For up to 20 people to have a private screening of something that's currently running. It's $200. I also saw Madi in there today for $125. I don't know why the Canadian films are cheaper. But $200. So you get 20 people, $200. Easy math. It's pretty good. I don't know how that's going to go, if you're going to have access to everything in the Cineplex digital store, but it's very exciting. And if you're afraid to go to the movies right now, you kind of don't have to be. The start times are very staggered. You never see anybody in there. That's a cool way to do it. And, you know the audience that's going in with you and who's going to be touching the railings and things like that. The other bit is a gay movie alert. There aren't that many of those. Ammonite, starring Kate Winslet as the paleontologist Mary Anning and Saoirse Ronan as her love interest, is on now, also at Bears Lake. I hope to one day see a contemporary lesbian story in theaters, because I don't actually like period pieces, and 2 hours of yearning I can do on my own time and do. Ammonite got mixed reviews at TIFF, but its release reviews have been much better. Not that it matters. We have so little. Get out there and see it. One thing you can't do is go to the release show for Tara Spencer's brand new album, Chasing Rabbits, which is happening tonight, Thursday, at the Carlton and has been sold out for weeks. But I can help you out. I can play you something from it, and I shall. Here's Tara Spencer with Feels Like Home.
Skyscrapers, stoplights, and bar fights spill into the street. I walk home at midnight and I keep my eyes on my feet. Loneliness dark and deep in the city that doesn't sleep. No trace of your smile on the faces of strangers I meet. I stare out the window, lost in the space of my bed. The sounds from the sidewalk can't drown out the noise in my head. The view can't compare to your eyes. The city can't sing lullabies. big city lights shining bright on my small town dream. Excitement, the future in high beam. I thought I was ready to fly, but I've been falling since we said goodbye. And the stars in the sky, they are farther away than they seem.
It's been a complicated time for everyone, and that includes the local film industry. Joining me now, we have the Executive Director of Screen Nova Scotia, Laura McKenzie. Hello.
Hi, Tara. How are you?
It's your first podcast. I'm very honored.
I'm excited. I'm thrilled.
Excellent. Yeah. And also director, writer, queen genius, Steph Jo Lynn.
I'm also thrilled.
Excellent.
Not just Laura. I'm thrilled, too. We're all very
thrilled. Everyone's thrilled. I'm so glad that you're both here. And Steph, do you want to let people know that you've changed your name from Clattenburg so people know who they're thinking about?
Yeah,
you like
sure.
to have people think about you.
Yeah, I do. I do like it when people think about me. Yes, my name used to be Clattenburg. I'm right in the middle of a legal name change. So my middle name, Jolin, is now legally going to be my last name. I actually have to go to the police station to do fingerprints tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
You got to do that when you get your name changed.
Great. I'm glad they're diligent about some things. okay, let's talk about the movies and the screen industry. Laura, when the world shut down in March, what kind of time of year is that normally for screen arts in Nova Scotia, the screen industry in Nova Scotia?
Yeah. Well, typically at that time of year, we would be really starting to ramp up. So, you know, shows would be moving into pre-production. You know, I mean, typically we would have a few shows that would be shooting by then, sort of maybe even some of the sort of smaller unscripted shows would be off and running by then. Maybe some documentaries would be off and running by then. I think we probably had two or three shows that were just about to go to camera and had to shut down.
And are those sort of gone forever, or did they get rescheduled, or will they come back?
They all came back.
Oh, excellent. Can you tell us which ones they were?
Not the very next day, but...
took a while.
So... There is a couple of unscripted projects that were working title. I don't know the name of them.
Okay.
And then...
Chapelwaite was one of them, correct?
Chapelwaite was one of them.
So that's the big Stephen King miniseries?
Yeah, Stephen King
miniseries. Adrienne Brody and Emily Hampshire are here for?
That is...
If you've seen them around, it's really them. They're here for a long time.
I can't confirm, but you can.
Oh, yeah, Screen Nova Scotia never comments on things. It's infuriating. But we can't say.
Me and Tara will just nod. We'll do it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Adrienne Brody's in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I can confirm that they have been seen around town.
There you go. Maybe they're just visiting outside of the bubble, like Daniel Radcliffe. We all knew that was true, too. Okay. So, yes, you know, Nova Scotia finding itself in a very bizarre position to be largely COVID-free. As we're talking, who's to say what could happen in the next few days between this being recorded and being aired? But we're doing well with the bubble, so it made us... very appealing for production. So about when did that interest start? Well, I guess, when did you realize that production could start back up?
Well, I mean, I think across the country, I was sort of participating on a lot of national industry task force calls. So we'd be sort of gathering information, sharing it together. And so we sort of figured out around the end of April that we could start to kind of work towards getting back to work. And then we figured out here in Nova Scotia that we were going to need our health and safety protocol guidelines. So we got to work on those very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. By around sort of the first week of June, we had them. And then I think we had production up and running within the next couple of weeks.
So that's really not a huge hit in like world terms. A few months, that's pretty decent.
It's not. I thought we did really good.
Right.
Yeah. And we've done really, really good at getting productions running and moving. And, you know, getting through compounded work schedules. Like, mm-hmm. I think the industry here has been very collegiate, you know, sort of sharing schedules and getting stuff done. It's been great.
Steph, you've worked on a few things in the pandemic, in TV and in film. So tell me about what a set used to be like.
Those listening who don't work in the film industry, unless you're talking about a small documentary, which might have a crew of five people or four people, usually sets consist of 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people. Depending on the size of the production.
Or higher. Laura's like, check
Laura's
it out.
Like, or higher. Yeah.
250.
The sets I have like been the director on considered pretty low budget movies. You know, there'll be at least 30 people on set or something mm-hmm. like that. So when you consider that sometimes you're shooting on location, I haven't worked on films that have a lot of big studio budgets. So it's not like we're building sets in a big studio. You're just going to someone's house who lent it to you or rented it to you. So sometimes you're all squished together in a bathroom trying to shoot a scene or so there typically was pre-COVID a lot of everyone squished together. And then there's what they call craft table, which is a table of snacks and water and coffee all day. Cast and crew can just go, you know, grab a handful
of chips.
It's
just like out in the open?
Yeah, that's how it used to be. I mean, it would just be
I have to just ask, like, are crews getting slimmer?
Because
when I worked on set, that's what you did. You sat at the craft table and ate.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. everybody sort of jokes that when you are on a set that you gain weight because you're just eating snacks all day because it's there and it's free, and why not?
Hurry up and wait and eat.
Yeah, exactly. But this, actually, there have been a couple different approaches. Well, a pretty similar approach, actually. I was the writer and director of a TV movie that shot in July, so I think we were one of the first to go. And that was 3 weeks of shooting. So what we did was we had a craft table that was like often being wiped down with Lysol wipes. Mm-hmm. But even the food, instead of having like muffins out on a plate, it would just be like muffins in a little Ziploc bag or right. like a granola bar. It was stuff that you could wrap up. Not just like, here's a bunch of chips, you know? So I think in turn, you know, we end up wasting more,
right.
using more plastic and right. stuff. But that was sort of the safest way to go. But then I got a gig as the shadow director on Block 3 of Feudal. Screen Nova Scotia actually put out a call looking for someone to shadow direct, which is just me hanging out with the director of Scott Smith, who was doing Block 3. So I was just kind of by his side watching him do it, sort of like an on-set learning experience, which was really fun. And on that set, they did, instead of having everything in Ziploc bags, I had someone actually manning or like a person in charge of the craft table. So you'd go up and you'd say, can I have an orange? And he would pass you the orange. Wow. So it was less people's hands getting in there, everybody mm-hmm. getting in there. And you would just ask for the snack, and you would get the snack. And there, I must have lost weight, because normally I would go up and grab 5 granola bars and leave. But because I had to ask somebody, I was like, I think I'll just take 1 muffin. And then like 2 hours later, I'm like, will he judge me if I ask for another muffin? You know? So it was a... Those were sort of the two different approaches specifically to the craft table. But other than that, COVID sort of changed onset, as far as I could tell, by just like less people in the rooms.
Right.
And everybody wearing masks, of course, and staying away from each other. And
well, that
sort of thing.
That is a question I have, because the sets are so heavily populated and people are just passing by each other constantly. And, you know, everyone has different places to be at different times. How was the way that sets were controlled? Did that change drastically?
Well, I think it was more like, it felt a little bit more like closed sets more often. And so if you don't work in the industry, what a closed set is, if someone, there's nudity or a sex scene on the call sheet or something, it'll say, you know, scene 5, it's going to be a closed set, which means not everyone is standing around watching the sex scene happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just who... quote unquote has to be there, like the director, probably the first AD, the assistant director, and like the sound person, you know, whoever has to be in the room can be there. And it felt more like every set almost was a closed set. Mm-hmm. So like hair and makeup could come in, but then they would leave, they wouldn't just stand nearby. So it was sort of different in that way.
Yeah,
I'll jump in there, because it was really interesting, like once we got our sort of health and safety guidelines back up and running, or once we had them published, each production would take them, and they would either hire like a, you know, COVID coordinator, or, you know, somebody to come in and create a production plan that was going to work specifically for their production. So some people were working in pods, you know, and some people would do exactly that. Like they would just have, you know, sort of separate closed sets. Some would have buddies, like you could only hang out with your buddies on set. But it was really interesting, like, and I would sort of get feedback on this, on how they were using the protocols and like what, you know, sort of interesting or innovative types of sort of, you know, protocols were coming out of it. It was really neat to see, actually.
And what about love scenes?
Yeah, I wasn't on set for any scenes where anyone was.
Are there none in your TV movie?
No.
The teens?
No.
There aren't any.
No, there's not even like a kissing scene in that movie.
Wow. Yeah. I'm shocked, actually.
I was actually right. I was finishing the script while COVID was still, like, we were in COVID when I was finishing the script.
Right.
So it was nice to be like, nope, not writing that in, because yeah, I don't know what we're going to be allowed to do.
Mm-hmm. What I heard is that, or what I know from, you know, some productions that did have obviously intimacy, is that they just created a bubble with those that were going to be intimate, and mm-hmm. And typically it's the cast anyways. So a lot of the cast at that time was working in bubbles anyways, so they would quarantine together for 14 days, and then they could do their scenes.
Yeah, and the quarantine brings up a good point, because and like having a COVID person also does, because those are added production costs to a lot of productions that are already kind of like. Largely low budget. Not Chapel 8, obviously, with its 250 people on set. But, you know.
Hey, it's still expensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But stuff like, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that you would shoot or whatever. It's just like, have you gotten any feedback from, you know, people who aren't maybe working with a studio or maybe working at a lower, like, six-figure budget about that kind of thing and the amount that it adds to their budgets, which are very tight already?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did a lot of work with producers leading up to that, because I was doing a lot of advocacy on their behalf to try to get the government to weigh in, or at least provide
right.
some relief funding for this stuff, right? And so there was a lot of additional costs that came along with quarantine, because you have to not only pay for the quarantine, but you have to pay them their full day rate while they're in quarantine. So there's that. And then there's, you know, all the necessities that they need, and it's just, you know, taking care of them. So, you know, for a small budget production where, you know, every dollar has to be stretched to the max, I mean, it was pretty prohibitive,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, even for big productions like Chapel 8, for instance, you know, they have day players that would come in from Toronto, typically. You know, they would come in like once a month for a couple of days. They can't pay for those quarantine costs.
Right.
So every production was affected depending on the scale, you know, whatever the scale.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if more local people got hired. Do you know that? I was wondering if there's just more like, hey, you're in the Atlantic bubble already, and you're a pretty good actor. Why don't you just get this instead of this Toronto person?
Word on the street is that is what happened. Yeah,
that's
and
all
you know,
right.
I sort of weigh in with the unions and the guilds, and you know, of course, with Richard over at ACTRA, and everybody seems pretty happy about the number of jobs that are being used up here in Nova Scotia. And I think from everybody that I talked to that was coming out in from outside of Nova Scotia to film, they wanted to use as many Nova Scotians as possible.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. That kind of worked out for us.
Yeah.
Steph, you made a film called Night Blooms, which I have seen and read the script, and stars an American. And yeah. I know you were talking about reshoots, adding some scenes. What's that process? Is it possible?
We don't know. I don't have any information to give you on that. Mm-hmm. We are in a kind of holding pattern because, yeah, we were talking about reshooting a couple scenes or even adding a couple scenes to just strengthen the film a little bit. But the sort of main two main people, one lives in Toronto and one lives in L.A. So both would have to be
right.
quarantined if we want to do that. So we've just sort of been on hold to see what happens mm-hmm. and to see when that would be possible.
So if you want something like that to happen, you have to submit an official proposal to Strang. And Strang will go through it and his team, and then they'll determine whether or not it's going to work.
I'm not laughing. I'm just laughing at the idea of Dr. Strang being like, ah, yes.
Nick Stahl, I think I saw him in Terminator
yeah,
3.
Papa Strang's just got his big stamp. Just
I
big
saw
yes
in the bedroom, now. Yes. well, that brings up another question, which is festivals. So we've just gone through our very first bizarro virtual festival season. So Finn was all online. TIFF was largely online. They did some sort of hybrid thing. I don't know how it worked out. Sundance is going to be online. South by Southwest is going to be online. Stephanie is someone who makes films that play festivals. How are you feeling about, first of all, is a virtual festival run something that you want? And second of all, would you, let's say this Nick Stahl thing wasn't on the table. Would mm-hmm. you hold the film back a year and kind of see if real festivals came back?
Yeah, I keep flip-flopping on how I feel about this, because at first I was like, well, let's just hang on to Night Blooms, maybe do those reshoots, we'll see when we can. Let's hang on to it for an extra year, because I don't want to do an online festival anyway. Mm-hmm. The thing that's fun about festivals is, like, I like going to the parties and, like, dressing up and being like, hey, everyone, look at me. And, like, you know.
Not about finding a distributor.
The producers are like, we're doing real work. And I'm like, I'm looking for content for Instagram. Like, So, like, honestly, that's the fun part for me.
Is going to the festival. I agree, yeah. Going to TIFF is, you go to TIFF.
Yeah, it's an
it's
event.
Not watching
it's
a
energy.
Movie in my house. Yeah.
Totally different. Yeah. Yeah. So, at first I was like, well, I don't want to do any online festivals. Just hold the film for 5 years if we have to, you know? But then there's the other flip side of that. Now I'm coming around to being like, well, maybe people will be hungry for online content soon. And maybe this is an opportunity to I don't know what we'll do with the film. Maybe we'll go straight to some sort of other platform. I'd have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm open and it's not as fun. I mean, it's just not the same energy, right? Sitting in your house, watching something, you could get distracted, look at your phone, you could go to the bathroom, but when you're in a theater, you sort of are forced to be, in the energy of the film, and the sound is better and the lighting is better and
the people are there and there's an energy.
Yeah. And I know. I it kind of breaks my heart thinking about premiering that movie to nobody, like not seeing a room watch it.
Right.
Would hurt my feelings. That's pretty small. It's a pretty first world problem to complain about.
but it's like it's a factor in how small movies, which is especially local movies, live is on the festival circuit. It's like if the festival circuit's all online, it's sort of hard to convince the average person that they should do this thing now as opposed to going to something as a live event. What have you, Laura, what have you been hearing about festivals now that they're all kind of through?
I miss them dearly. Mm. I miss them dearly. And like, Stephanie, as an artist, you want to be in a room when people see your art, right? Mm. I totally get that. I mean, it's the same thing, for me, when I'm typically going out to a festival, I'm there for industry events and I get to, go out and go to the parties and go to the movies and meet all the people. I just really miss that. I miss that part of life. But for the most part, I really just, concern myself with the filmmakers who need to get their films distributed and, need to get some eyeballs on their films. So, I mostly have the sympathy for the filmmaker.
So the future, I know we don't know. I know no one knows. But in terms of production in Nova Scotia, are people from outside of Canada like circling?
They are knocking. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. The calls have been coming in for a few months now. It goes in peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. You know, they sort of went through this massive peak when Nova Scotia opened up really quickly and we were safe. And then Canada opened up and sort of the calls kind of petered out.
Right.
And then Canada became, you know, now super unsafe again. And now the calls are starting to come back in.
Interesting.
So, you know, all the production that happened this year, I mean, that was really just compounded, you know, production schedules, right? But the calls that were coming in are for productions that could potentially land this year. Nobody's invincible. We have got to stay safe for this to happen. But I do believe, fingers crossed, that if we stay, you know, at least fairly safe, then we're going to have a really, really busy 2021 because we've got productions that want to land.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, and I heard that it was like more than we can handle. Like,
yeah, we could never supply the demand.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I kind of feel like all my friends that moved away are moving home too. Like, I kind of feel like, I wonder mm-hmm. if this is the end of like, everyone lives in Toronto and Vancouver and mm-hmm. Montreal. And everyone's like, I'm going to go home to my parents' place and I'm going back to Atlantic Canada. Let's make art here. And
yeah.
I feel like if I could walk away from this job, you know, knowing one thing, that the work that we did here during this time, during COVID, to land these projects brought all those people home, I would feel like my job here is done.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I should go on record saying, like, the stuff that I was talking about COVID-wise that, like, Feudal was doing and the TV mm-hmm. movies was doing, those aren't the only things.
Right.
So I just want to go on record being like, there was also like cleaners there and people sure. cleaning the bathroom. Every time one person went in, you had to have it clean before the next person went in. Like, there was lots of other stuff. I just don't want people to be listening and think like, oh, they just had a craft table guy. Because like, that's not it. Like, they yeah. were like super diligent.
And what's with everyone wants to know about the tests and the temperature taking. How often does that happen and what's the deal?
Yeah, yeah. Well, for Feudal, it was every morning you got an email that you had to fill out a questionnaire. Have you been in contact? Blah, blah, blah. And then if you pass that, just say no. But also on your way to set, you had to drive by like a checkpoint where like a guy comes to your window, like you're sitting in the car and then comes to the window and does the little thing that looks like a gun that goes towards your forehead.
I've seen it at the Apple store.
Yeah.
Not the airport. The Apple store though.
Yeah. And so that's done for every crew member every morning. And on the TV movie, which was before Feudal, we had one of those, and it was a more random. It was through the day. Someone was just going around checking temperatures with that little gun,
right.
And also the questionnaire in the morning.
So none of the swabs?
No, but I think I had heard something. I think the cast and stuff, like people that were, I think maybe had to be in closer contact had those. I don't know mm-hmm. very much more specifics about that.
Is it... I don't know how this is going to sound. I'm going to say it. Is it still worth making movies under these parameters?
I feel like at first, I mean, I was never complaining about a mask from day one. Even when some people were like, this is annoying. I'm like, no, it's not. Sure, if I can help save a life or, you know, not get my parents sick because I'm wearing, like, the small inconvenience of wearing a mask or wearing gloves or washing your hands more often, to me, I don't think that's worth complaining about. But even the slight inconvenience to me has gone. Like, even I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be a little awkward to be on set, where normally a director would go close to an actor mm-hmm. after you say cut, and you go to an actor, you're not supposed to yell, do it better this time, you know? You're supposed to go close and kind of, you don't want to embarrass them or something, go, oh, okay, you messed up that line, and it's sort of an intimate conversation, so I was like, how am I going to have those conversations? I can't get right up to the actor's face. Not only is it awkward that we're wearing masks, or that if they're on screen, they're not wearing masks, but between takes they are, but even that went right out the window. Like, after day one, I was like, oh, it's fine, like, you just adjust. So I don't think it's really an inconvenience at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this was the rest of filmmaking for me for the rest of my life, I'm like, this is fine, still get to make movies,
right?
Better than not making movies,
right?
I mean, for me, really, it just depends on you know, it depends on what's at stake. You know, all the risk falls to the producer, right? There's no production insurance out there. Canada has come out with a $50 million relief fund for productions that are implicated and have to go down. But, you know, here in Nova Scotia, if a production goes down, you know, and you have to shut down, can you afford to pay your crew and your cast for 2 weeks?
Right. And that is a question that I did have, which is like, is there a contingency plan for, a COVID breakout on set?
All the productions that went into production this year took all the risk on themselves.
Wow.
Because there wasn't even a relief fund until 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't even started to be distributed yet. And it's $50 million, you know, that's going to, you know, take care of BC last week.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, we're not getting into that money here.
Right.
So if producers are, you know, taking their hard earned, you know, monies and taking their scripts and going into production right now, they're assuming all the risk. Mm-hmm. So that's terrifying.
It's terrifying. And that doesn't surprise me that from my experience being on Feudal and the TV movie, it doesn't surprise me knowing that. That they were so strict. Like everything was cleaned and everything was social distance and reminders and reminders of.
I mean, I would typically be taking politicians to set and visiting set.
Oh yeah, no visitors.
I didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Didn't go anywhere. I couldn't get anybody on any set or nothing at all.
Yeah. So I guess I don't know. It's not good that there's no insurance, but it does make sense that they were being really careful because it's their money that they're worried about, but hopefully they're also worried about people's lives. But
I mean, like network shows, like, you know, Feudal, for instance, probably have some money from E1 behind them. So if they were implicated, then probably E1 would back that. You know, CBC would probably take a little piece of it too, but who knows? Mm-hmm. But, but for, you know, our local productions, our locally created productions that are, you know, doing sort of low budget telephone features, you know, just like when they went to camera, I was just like, it was cross your fingers, you know, and hope that everything just goes well.
Yeah.
Because there was no solution for them.
And even just normal sick. Like, it's sort of known that when you're shooting a movie, you're going to get a cold because everyone's working long hours and they're outside and they're... But, like, I was even like, what if I just get a normal cold? Like, it's not like it used to be. You can't just go to set and, like, blow your nose and be like, cough, cough, you know?
Right.
So that worried me. I think I've talked to a lot of other people.
It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal, you know? We can't go to work. We can't go in the world anymore if we sniffle. It's not fair. It's not right, you know? So to go to work when, you know, people are relying on you and they don't want you to go to work because obviously they don't want you to implicate the set. But again, they need you to go to work because they can't replace you in a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I watch this happen every single day. I live with an executive producer of film and a TV show. And every single day you get calls. You know, I'm not feeling like a scratchy throat this morning. And he'd be like, damn it. You know, because you can't get mad at him for calling and he can't get, you know, there's no solution.
Yeah. It's also easier to get out of work, though, if you wanted to make up that you were sick. If you remember when you used to be like, oh, I can't just call into work because I have a common cold. Now you can.
I feel really bad for all the professors at all the universities in Halifax right now. I think about them all the time. Like, students are definitely not going to school.
Oh, yeah.
Like the distance learning? And they're just like doing Zoom into the ether?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's and then they're all going to the bitter end and giving COVID to
everybody.
They're
going all the worst person down.
I shouldn't say that. I don't know how old those people were. It's funny. Did you know, like, when in the whole, these are the places that might have had COVID contact. And I was like, well, it's obviously like a 21-year-old student. I don't know that.
That doesn't know what the good bars
the
are.
Bitter
I
end
know.
And like
and the
local.
Shoe shop.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's like COVID's caught in the 90s.
So that was the funniest thing I saw on the internet when somebody said that the bitter end and the shoe shop and, you know, how, you know, it's like that. It's definitely the 90s.
Yeah.
It's so true. I didn't even know the bitter end existed.
Me either. I thought it was at least 5 years closed. And I used to work at a
so
newspaper.
Old.
That's we're older than Steph, but you're coming
we're
up.
All on,
you're coming
we're
up.
We're all unhip maybe at this point or something.
As a Steph, what are you working on now?
I'm writing stuff. I'm writing. I actually was thinking about that. I was like, what am I doing now? Oh, I'm also working on a short documentary for a show called Farm Crime on CBC Gem.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool show. And I'm directing one of those episodes. And I'm writing a TV pilot. I'm writing a feature film about time travel.
Right.
Mike Volpe is co-producing with me. I'm really excited about that. I hope it goes. And then I'm developing another project for hopefully after that. So I'm just trying to
make work.
Yeah. It's just like go, see what we can get made, see what I can possibly sell or put into production or something.
Are there jobs that people could learn how to do in the next 6 months with this onslaught of crew necessity coming in?
Yeah, there
like,
are.
Like, what are the holes?
I mean, there's, you know, location managers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have really strong production designers, you know, carpenters, builders, that sort of thing. But we just need more hands.
Okay.
You know, we need more camera people. We need more sound. Where's all the sound, Stephanie?
No one wants to hold a microphone over their head all day, I think would be my quibble.
Then innovate. What's the solution?
Like, I don't know.
Boomsticks
sort of
are so antiquated. Get rid of them.
Yeah. A drone?
There you go.
I'm going to be a sound guy next year.
It would just sound like
the drone. It would have to be a silent drone.
So every take, you just hear the drone sound.
But when you think about it, you know, there's so many skills that are just transferable.
Right.
Right. And there's a lot of people not working. So what do you do? Like, let's, you know, so we're trying to figure out a plan to get out there and try to sort of access, you know, some of these people that may not be, you know, finding as much work right now.
Well, so if you're listening and you've wondered if you can be in pictures, maybe next year's your year. Behind the camera.
Yeah, well, I've always say this anytime I teach classes or anything. I'm like, I think when people don't work in the film industry, they think, well, I know what an actor is. Maybe I know what a producer or director is, but I don't know. I know someone probably operating a camera. But what you don't know is, like, if you're interested or you are artistic at all, there's almost definitely a place or really organized or something. There's a place on a film set for you. Like, their art department is so interesting, and like, there's so many different departments that I really think almost anyone could find a spot. And I think that's what most people don't understand.
It does seem inaccessible.
Yeah.
Right? It's a little esoteric.
There's unions and stuff.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
But go to AFCOOP, you know, to AFCOOP and get involved in one of their set etiquette courses. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the first way to just introduce yourself to what it is to be on set.
I just finished working for AFCOOP, so I feel like safe to say that it's always bothered me. They've never called that class setiquette, which is just sitting there.
Oh, my God. That is such a waste.
Maybe they can change it going forward.
Martha, if you're listening.
Yeah.
We can change it right now.
Yeah.
Setiquette course, people.
I worked on a short film once where my job was, it was a night shoots, and my job was to guard the equipment truck. Like, what was I gonna do if some guy stole a clamp? I don't know.
I've done that job too.
Yeah, it's not
I've
fun.
Been the lighthouse.
Yeah. He's pointing.
How does it go? You're just like,
wait, what are you pointing at?
Well,
the job?
All you're doing is going around and round in a circle to make sure that there's no like looky-loos around or like somebody trying to sneak on set.
Right.
So you're literally just walking in circle.
Wow.
All night long.
That must have been a shoot with famous people on it.
Come on, tell us.
No, just joking. That was a VV long time ago.
This is like Demi Moore. All right, well, this was really fun and informative. Thank you both. Steph, I know you've done many podcasts. Laura, your first time. I hope it was all right.
Oh, it was super fun. I feel like I'm just over all of it now. So I'll podcast any day of the week if you want me
to. Excellent. I recommend you as a guest. Mm-hmm. So thanks to you both, and good luck. Fingers crossed for the future.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Engineered by Palmer Jameson at the Golden Palm and produced by the Halifax Examiner.